Welcome back to the Paranormal Classroom, where we take attendance for the unexplained. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Lindsay, and we're two teacher moms talking about stuff that freaks us out. In a quiet room in Toronto, eight people sat around a table. They focused, they meditated, they visualized, and soon, something knocked back. But here's the catch. Philip, the ghost they contacted, was entirely fictional. Or so they thought.
Welcome, scholars.
Yes,
yoo-hoo. It's Lindsay's night. Lindsay's on it.
Yoo-hoo.
Are we going to do what's haunting you first, or are you just going to...
Would you just let me lead this one?
You do.
You take the... Listen.
You do.
You and your stomach ache, all of a sudden you get very bossy. She's not feeling well. You know how I know? Not because she told me, but because she's like, are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? Are we going to do it this way?
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I'm sorry, but if any listeners hear me burp, that's because I've got a sour stomach today.
Did you notice in the last episode I was like burping through?
No.
There were several times where I was like...
I'm surprised I missed it.
And I was like, that is so gross. And I knew it was happening in the moment, but I didn't want to stop mid-sentence because I knew the editing nightmare that would be.
Right.
So I just pressed on, and next time I'm going to...
That's funny.
I'm going to stop. Giddy up. Ready?
I'm on
the
my horse.
The Philip experiment.
I know the Philip experiment.
I know you do, so I had to dive deep into other things related to it.
Super excited.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. The Philip experiment. What do you know about it? Internet show. You, Amanda.
Are we going to do what's haunting you right now?
She just whispered to me, are we going to do what's haunting you?
I'm worried you're going to forget.
Yeah, I did. And you're right. I need you to be bossy. Sorry, I take it back.
I knew you were going to go. Cause
I forgot to put it in my script.
You got to put it in your script and then you'll remember it. Yeah.
Okay, yes. What's haunting you, Amanda?
I have a funny story from last
night.
Yes.
Okay, okay, so, I need funny stories.
And if you hear the rain, it's because it is raining.
It's because it's raining.
Enjoy the ASMR.
We're not sitting in a sprinkling somewhere.
We'll try to talk a little louder. Okay, last night, my husband came home from work, and he was really tired, and he went to sleep. And he does this a lot. He just goes to sleep, and then when that happens, I'll come in later, like 10 o'clock, and I'll wake him up, and he'll get up, and he'll... do his things he would have done if he hadn't fallen asleep, right? Like play video games and stuff. So
other important business.
Yeah. So I go in at 10 and I wake him up. I said, do you want to get up or do you want to keep sleeping? And he said, I have to get up. I have to get the birthday presents ready. And oh. I'm thinking like, who's having a birthday? Because I'm very on top of birthdays, right?
Right.
And I'm like, normally I'm the one reminding him. So I said, whose birthday is it? And he said, the dog's. And I'm like, it's not art. I don't know whose dog's birthday it is. I'm very confused.
That's so funny.
So I said, what dog? What are you talking about? And he's like, look, I got to go downstairs into the garage and get everything all ready. I'm like, for the birthday? For the presents? For the dog? I'm so confused. He's getting annoyed with me now, right?
Sure.
He's very annoyed at my inquisitiveness and my pestering. But I'm like thinking I'm losing my mind, right? And he's like, I got to go to the garage. I got to set up the MRI machine. I got to get all the electricity running to the right place. And again, I'm like, for this birthday for a dog? Like, I'm so confused. I think I'm losing my mind, right?
That's a new thing. I've heard of like bouncy castles and clowns, but MRI machine at a birthday party, that's new.
Guess what? He was asleep the whole time. He was talking in his sleep.
That's a lot.
And then he woke up later and he didn't have a single memory of it.
Whoa. He needs a sleep apnea machine.
Is that right?
Yeah. My husband, Mike, used to do this to me all the time. The most famous was the first event where he jumps out of bed. I don't know why I need to be involved. Like, that's like, why am I'm always involved when this would happen. It doesn't happen anymore because he has a what do you call this? A breathing machine thing.
Okay.
What is that called? A CPAP. Thank you. But the first one was he jumped up and he's a big man. And so the whole bed is like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm a pretty light sleeper. And he runs over to the window and he's like, throws open the blinds and the curtains and he's like, and I go, what? Because I'm freaked now. Like, you are freaking me out. What is going on? And he's like, the house is rolling down the hill.
Oh, gosh.
The house
is rolling down the hill.
Yes. And I'm like, but then I realize, no, it's not. A, we live at the bottom of the hill. B, it wouldn't be rolling down the hill if we were at the top of the hill. So I was like, oh, okay, honey, you're dreaming. It's okay. Gently wake him up. And then it was like, there's bugs in our bed was another one. So he's like flipping all the covers off and like, there's bugs in our bed and swatting at everything. Another time was our daughter was in our bed. She was little and he like grabs her and starts running away and is saying, I don't remember what that one was about, but that scared me because now he's involved our child and right. I didn't want her to get hurt. Oh. Even though in his dream he was trying to protect her from something. So all of that though and more symptoms of sleep apnea were totally eliminated once he got the CPAP machine.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah. All right, I'll mention it to the hubby.
Yeah. That's and he can talk to Mike about it because he 100% would be like, dude, you got to do it. You got to do the sleep studies. You got to do it.
Yeah.
It's a game changer. It'll extend your life. It'll make you so much healthier in so many different ways.
That's wild, though, that he got out of bed and it was physical. Like, this was just verbal for my hubby.
Oh, he hadn't gotten up yet.
No, he's just laying in bed telling me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Everything he needs to do.
But he was in such a rush, but he didn't get moving.
He's so just laying funny.
He probably, in his dream state, he probably thought he was. He probably envisioned himself up and running around.
Maybe.
That's really funny. Well, sir, Amanda's husband, who I shall not name, get thee to a sleep study. It will change your life and it might just save your marriage.
All right, what's haunting you?
Oh, man, nothing really. I emailed, so I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, which is the Bananas Podcast, Weird News Podcast. They're awesome. I've talked about them before, Scotty Landis and Kurt Brownoler, and I heard Scotty say, hey, if you have a podcast, I don't care how big it is, as long as it's not your first one, I'll do a half hour. And I love this guy. He's a Hollywood screenwriter. He wrote the horror film Ma. That came out with Octavia Spencer. Mm-hmm. He's just a rad, humble. Both those men are just awesome, humble. They're just good dudes. So anyway, I heard that. So I sent them a DM, literally at the stoplight on the way here, sent them a message saying, hey, told them a little bit about the Paranormal Classroom and invited them to call in at some point, like do another phone
thing. That would be amazing.
Thing. So we'll have to That's it, though. It's just exciting stuff. There's exciting things happening all over the place.
Yeah, you've got a lot going on.
All right, you ready to continue?
I'm so ready for the Philip experiment.
What do you know about the Philip experiment?
Here's what I know.
I think you knew a lot more than I did going into this.
I know that this was an experiment that took a very long time. I think it took place over a year. You can verify this. But basically, the experiment was to see if they could create something like a ghost with energy. So they came, it was this group of people, and I think it was in the 70s, and they came up with a whole backstory for a ghost named Philip. They gave him a whole like life and background, and they would speak to him, and they would like really focus their energy and meditate on him, and they would have seances, and they really tried to make themselves believe that Philip was real. And it took an extremely long time. I'm surprised they didn't stop the experiment. But towards the end of the year, however long it took, weird things started happening. Like, tables started moving on its own. There were knocking sounds. Like, all the things you hear about in the other ghost stories that Lindsay and I have told were happening. And it was all done with an experiment that
yes.
was created.
I will say, allegedly. So... yeah, you're right. I had to check the date again. But the Philip experiment was a 1972 parapsychology experiment conducted in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, to determine whether living people, can communicate with fictionalized ghosts mm-hmm. through expectations of human will. And let me go back to my notes here, and then I will come back to that page in a second. So it was kind of a supernatural psychology project. It began with an idea. Just like you described, what if a group of people could create a ghost through imagination and belief alone? So it was sort of a seance meets science hybrid experiment. A group of 8 people from a paranormal research society, none of them professional mediums, were tasked with imagining a fictional ghost. Their goals were to create a fictional character through a purposeful methodology and then, quote unquote, attempt to communicate with it through seance. The character created and agreed upon was named Philip Aylesford, referred to as Philip during the test. His fictional history that they completely fabricated partially coincided with actual events and places, but with multiple contradictions and errors on purpose, so that if this conjuring actually occurred and referenced things that were in error on purpose, like they had actually happened to it, they would know, like, oh, that was something that didn't, that's not an actual entity, because that's not, that didn't really happen. That wasn't a thing that happened in history. If okay. That makes sense.
Yes.
It was kind of their, like, a control in a way.
Interesting control. Okay.
Yeah. He was born, Philip Aylesford, this made-up ghost, was born in 1624 in England, had an early military career, and was knighted by the age of 16. They went...
16, go yeah, Philip.
They went hard. He was involved in the English Civil War and became personal friends with Charles II, working for him as a spy. Philip was unhappily married to a woman named Dorothea, and later fell in love with a Romani girl who was accused of witchcraft and burned at the stake.
Ow.
In despair.
I didn't know this backstory. This is really fascinating.
Isn't that fun? Mm-hmm. In despair, Philip committed suicide in 1654 at the age of 30. The group was seated around a table, with initial seances yielding no contact, no communication, no phenomenon. Owen then changed the test conditions by dimming lights and changing the environment to mimic that of a more, quote-unquote, traditional seance.
Okay.
Yeah. At that point, participants began feeling a presence, table vibrations, breezes, unexplained echoes, and rapping sounds, which matched responses to questions about Philip's life. At one point, the table tilted on a single leg, and at other times moved across the room without human contact. Although audio, video, and witness accounts document the paranormal phenomenon.
Right, you can see the video on YouTube. It's crazy.
Yeah, because it's the 70s. They had all that.
Mm-hmm.
Philip never appeared to the participants. Yeah. So, yeah, there's actual video footage showing the table tilting and this Philip character supposedly responding to yes or no questions. So here's the kicker. Every single person in the room knew Philip wasn't real. They made him up. So why was he knocking back? Or was he? So there's the criticism. The experiment has been criticized for lacking solid controls and providing ambiguous results due to the unreliability of, you guessed it, seances. Repeated tests, which created fictional characters named Lilith and Humphrey, yielded similar results under similar circumstances and were deemed inconclusive.
When
I get suspicious the second the lights go out, because that's when so many of these seance grifters would pull wires and do little tricks.
Sure.
And have little secret trap doors. And
well,
things.
I hope you've researched that, because I would love to know about all the different things people did to fake a seance, because I don't know the history.
I have heard many things in the past. I didn't dive into it for this particular podcast, but I have heard of a lot of just sort of magician, house magician tricks.
I'd like to know the magic tricks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what they are. Can you go back a little bit?
Yeah.
Lilith and who?
Humphrey.
And they were both created by who?
The same group.
The same group made...
with similar results.
Two other entities. They made them up and
supposedly,
they had similar
yeah.
experiences with the knocking and the table moving.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But the one... yeah. The one guy... Dr. A.R. George Owen, and this whole thing, he was the mathematical geneticist that wanted to do this, and the test group had included his wife, and also the chairperson of Mensa in Canada, so the
wow.
genius organization named Margaret Sparrow. There was an industrial designer and his wife, a heating engineer and an accountant, a bookkeeper, and a sociology student.
These are intelligent people.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Definitely. So that was the experiment. So to give us background into what exactly that Philip experiment was, but that phenomenon of creating, potentially creating an entity or energy of some mm-hmm. kind with a fictional story is kind of what we're going to touch on today. A little more broadly.
It makes me want to test it. Like you and I come up
what
with something.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong? But I mean, they were brave enough to do it and they had amazing results, supposedly.
Supposedly.
So I wonder why, if more people are doing similar experiments. You know, like we've talked about Dana and Greg Newkirk before, mm-hmm. people we really kind of respect.
And Amy Bruni.
Yeah, I yep. wonder if they've ever tried to recreate
they have.
A Philip experiment.
They have. So we're going to talk about one.
Okay, cool.
For sure. That was one of my questions that I wanted to ask you if we did this. So if we made up a ghost right now, what kind of backstory would you give it?
Oh. Do you want male or female?
Female.
Okay. Let's go with a woman who was really, really smart and powerful. But okay. nobody knew it.
Ooh. Like she was hiding in a what was she? Let's
like,
go
I'm
to era.
Like
era
Oz.
In time.
I'm thinking like Oz, but she's behind the scenes and no one knows that it's really this woman who's like really smart and powerful. But not in Oz, but something in America that could be
like some sort of. So maybe we're in pre-suffrage.
Yes.
Era, so that a woman in power was not heard of.
Right.
But. Maybe she truly was like the real Rockefeller.
I know,
the real,
yeah.
Like, you know, they say behind every, what is it? Behind
strong
every
man
strong
is a strong
man
woman,
is
a, something
is
like
a
that.
Smarter woman or
yeah,
something.
So let's take an event that everybody knows.
What about like
and
railroads?
Put a woman behind it. She invented the railroad.
Or the Ford
She came
Motor
up
Company.
With the idea. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so she's a railroad baroness, which, but she was the one who came up with the
idea.
Uh-huh,
but her husband has all
coast
the credit.
Coast.
Yeah. So we'd have to look up who that guy is, and then that would be her last name.
Santa Fe. BNSF. Burlington Northern Santa Fe.
That's the name of the train here that Lindsay's referencing that always goes by.
She's Mrs. Burlington. We could give her that name. Let's give her that name.
Mrs. Burlington. Should she be like Gloria, or should we just call her Mrs.
Sure, Burlington? Gloria Burlington. And she spends a lot of energy pretending to be arm candy, just arm candy for her wealthy husband, when really she's the brains of the operation. The whole railroad from east to west was her idea.
I love it.
Yeah.
This is like a 145 IQ woman who hides it all.
Yeah.
Pretends she doesn't even open a book. And yet at night she's reading constantly.
And drawing maps and
yeah,
she's like really good with like topographical maps.
That's cool.
And because you'd have to design railroad.
Gloria Santa Fe. Oh, and what's her name? Gloria Burlington.
Gloria Burlington, nicknamed Santa Fe, for being hot and dry wit. The end. Okay, Gloria,
she
come
needs,
to us, Gloria.
She needs a...
Give us a sign of your presence, Gloria. If you're here with us, Miss Burlington. The rain stopped a while ago.
Well, yeah, but we have to do the experiment for years.
Right. You have to put... Well, I mean,
for
in 1972,
it
was...
for a long time.
But they generated 3 ghosts in that time.
Okay, here's the thing, though. So we got Gloria Burlington, and we can keep developing her backstory. But if reference her... For every time we do a podcast and we just kind of
welcome
imagine
her
that
into...
she's sitting in our back seat.
That'd be mind-blowing, though. Wouldn't that be mind-blowing?
It would be mind-blowing. This is why I feel like people should be doing this. If the Philip experiment
these
is mind-blowing.
People were never... So, as far as I know, and in what I've researched... Well, no, this isn't... What I'm about to say is not entirely true, as you will see as we get further into my notes. But with Philip and Humphrey and... What was the other one's name?
Lilith.
And the one from Kindred Spirits... Nobody ever saw anything. They just heard.
We wouldn't see
like,
it. We wouldn't see
tapping.
Mrs. Burlingham. We'd hear either tapping, which I think would be incredible.
Ooh, yeah.
Or something would like move,
Boxes.
Be thrown in your backseat.
McDonald's wrappers or whatever else I got back there. Baseball uniforms start flying around. Okay. Well, we're going to try this. We're going to generate Gloria Burlington.
OK. Can we invite the secret railroad our Baroness. Listeners and our scholars to join us? Like, sure. If you want to be a part of imagining, just putting your energy out and imagining Gloria Burlington.
Yeah, send us fun details about what her life might have looked like. Like, dates of birth, dates of death, cause of death. What did she do during her days to hide the fact that she was by night designing and masterminding railroads?
Did she have any physical characteristics or maladies or something that we can
She was beautiful ask her but walked about. With a limp.
Yes. Or had an eye patch.
An eye patch.
But like collectively,
yeah,
with us and our two listeners.
Super powered listeners.
We'll see how much power we get behind this woman.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, that's exciting. Philip wasn't real, but something was responding. And this wasn't an isolated incident. So enter two things that we're going to talk about next. Don't worry, we are going to get to kindred spirits. But the next two things that I want us to be thinking about as we continue are thought forms and something called tulpas. T-U-L-P-A-S. Tulpas.
I have heard that word.
You have?
Yes.
This was new to me.
It is a word thought that refers to what Philip might be. Correct?
Correct. So what the heck are these things? Well, a tulpa comes from Tibetan Buddhism. It refers to a being or object created through spiritual or mental powers, a manifestation. Today, it's often seen as a sentient entity formed in the mind with its own personality, thoughts, and agency. Tulpamancy. The practice of creating tulpas uses visualization, meditation, and focused thought. People create them.
Oh, no. This has me thinking about all kinds of things we could do.
Well, right. But they create them for companionship, insight, or psychological support. So positive things.
I would hope so. But you can probably make one for negative things, too.
Put away my laundry. So maybe the Philip experiment wasn't about ghosts. Maybe it was like a collective hallucination.
I don't believe in that. Because we all saw it. We saw it on the table move and we heard the
But was it, see, and I just don't know. I just feel like, that was wires. Because as soon as he turned off the lights, then I'm suspicious of him.
But it happened, but the film that you can see on YouTube is in a lit room.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so maybe, yeah. So it's not a hallucination, but could it be a shared thought form or a shared sort of tulpa?
It could be a magic trick. It could be shenanigans, or it could be something else that we just don't know. That
we don't understand.
We don't have the science or the physics for it.
So in Western esoteric circles, these same things, these tulpas are called thought forms, which I had heard that before. Same thing, I guess. So in the early 1900s, here's a job for you. Theosophists.
Wow.
Yeah. Like Annie Besant and C.W. Leadbeater. Or Leadbeater. Wrote about them. So there's three types of thought forms. One, resembling the thinker when visualizing oneself in another place. So that makes me think of like, what's that called? Astral projection, kind of.
Yeah.
And then
very similar.
So much crossover in some of this stuff. Second one is resembling an object or person, intense focus on someone or something comes out of that, or an abstract or representing of emotions or ideas, like something that's created out of intense anger or intense lust or greed. Like a sort of, I imagine that as being like a physical manifestation of like the seven deadly sins kind of thing, something so intense. They're mental constructs, but they could, theoretically, they could influence the physical world, especially if powered by group belief.
That
shared consciousness concept that we've touched on several times. What are you looking at?
I'm just looking out the window.
Gloria?
Is that you, Gloria?
Don't do that. You freak me out when you look over my shoulder.
I'm sorry. I don't see anything. Okay. I'm sorry.
Do you think everyone, potentially, or anyone, has created a thought form at some point without knowing it?
Oh, that's a great question. Where do they go if we have? There'd be a world full of billions of thought forms. Doing what? What are they doing? Is that all the ghosts that people think they see?
So there are people who claim that there is a whole spiritual realm, a spiritual world that most people cannot see, of like this hierarchy of angels and demons, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And that demons or energy, negative and positive, get attached to people. Mm-hmm. So like, and that's what might cause symptoms of depression or anxiety or self-loathing or hate or any of these negative things. So I'm wondering if all of these things, all of these theories about attachments or little beasts or demons or whatever, if it's all just manifestations of intentionality, intended emotions, intended ideas, intended wants and needs of human beings in by themselves or with collectively with others, and or generated because of intense experiences or emotions. And maybe that sort of everything is created, all of these supernatural paranormal phenomenon could be human created just because we don't understand the power of our emotions and intellect and mental capacity.
Yeah, that's a wild theory. I think we definitely create the reality around us with our thoughts and the way, you know, mm-hmm. two people can have the same experience, but if they process it differently, if they think about it differently, they will experience it differently. They'll have different feelings, right?
One well, just could... like us with the telepathy tapes.
Right.
A couple weeks ago. Right. Same darn podcast and two takeaways. Mm-hmm. And I could totally see your, you know, your perspective, your, what's the word? Not perspective, like the highlights for you became highlights for me as soon as you said like, oh, yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But initially, it didn't jump out at me that way and
yeah.
vice versa.
Yeah. Everybody has their own lens, mm-hmm. but I think that extends to not just like our thought, the way that we like process information on an academic level. I think it also has to do with the energy around us. Like we can affect the energy mm-hmm. around us. We can be affected by the energy around us.
And there's science.
If these are tulpas, I don't know, but.
Right. And I think maybe it's just an energetic shift, or maybe we just change, or we feel compelled to do something for positive or negative, and we attribute blame or credit to a physical something because we can't quite wrap our brains around our brains, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, actually.
So like self-help versus self-haunting, and we know that there's science that shows, that proves that like a positive mental attitude, I always talk yes. to kids about this, PMA is, does your brain believes what you tell it.
Yes.
So if you tell it positive, good things, I am smart, I am capable, I am good, I am kind, I am confident, all these things, it will believe you. And similarly, if you tell it negative things.
Right. And this is how you shape reality. And this all ties into witchcraft, which mm-hmm. it's like everything is connected.
Yeah.
Because
intentionality
is
I think existing, and then I'm just saying this, spitballing this out loud, existing seems to me to be a fine tightrope walk of intention and what's the word? Uncultivated or even unrecognized outputs, like emotional responses mm-hmm. or things like that. Things that we drop along our way that we aren't even aware that we're doing, positive or negative. And I think that there's ripple effects of those things as just as much as there are ripple effects of our intended negative and positive things that we do in the
right.
world. So, and I envision it like a tightrope, like each of us is walking along a tightrope, and behind us, dropping behind us that we're unaware of, is like this trail of breadcrumbs of the things that we aren't conscious of doing, of leaving behind in the world. And before us, laying down a path before us, is like one step in front of the other, is an intention.
Yeah.
I want to do this. I'm going to do that. But both make up the tightrope.
Yes. I love it. Here's a crazy thing. There's a woman that I was just learning about who's won the lottery a bunch of times.
Whoa.
Like over and over and over and over. And when asked how she does it, she uses intention to manifest winning the lottery. So here's how it works. She goes in believing that she's going to win the lottery. She doesn't question it. She believes it. She says that's part of the, that's part of the key. You go in believing you're going to choose, let's say they're lotto numbers, choose the right lotto numbers. It's not that she's choosing the right lotto numbers that will be chosen in the future. It's more that she's choosing lotto numbers and believing and changing the outcome so that they will choose her numbers in the future. So yeah. Instead of like, it's not about predicting the future. It's about
creating
the future, creating the experience that you're living in. She swears by it and she's won the lottery a bunch of times. I would love to be able to do it, but I've thought about it. I've thought about like going to Safeway and buying some lotto tickets and just being like, I'm going to win a dollar. Yeah. But I've tried it a few times and it hasn't worked. So I guess I haven't believed truly.
I think and her thing is the lottery, but I think we all have our things that if we stopped and thought about how we have created it, and people might call it like, do you have ambition, drive, aspirations, when really it's just, all of those things are just intentions.
Right.
I am setting an intention to go get that job, to get that opportunity, to provide this for that person or my family, or get this education, whatever it is.
Right.
It's an intention. You don't accidentally get a college degree. You don't accidentally get married to your life mate. Like, you have to set a lot of intentions along the way. Now, do opportunities present themselves to us sometimes? Sure. And there's no way to know if that was something, you know, whatever. But the intention part is, are you going to walk through the door of opportunity or ignore it? I live my life of like, when the door opens, I walk through it.
Right.
Because it's okay if it's not the perfect room on the other side. I know I've always lived that way and I know I'm going to get something out of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But that's my intention, is I intend to walk through doors of opportunity if it seems like a positive thing, especially if it scares the hell out of me, but I know it's going to grow me, I'll do it. I walk right on through it. Sometimes it works out. Most of it works out. Taking me all over the world.
If you go toward, this is something that Bashar said, if you go toward what excites you.
He's that psychic, right?
No, he's not. He's a channeler. He's I don't know what I believe about in channeling. I'm not saying that. But some of the things he says are really wonderful and loving and cool. So one of the things he says is, if you always go toward what excites you, then it's always the right choice for you.
Yeah.
So he's like, whatever you, just go toward what excites you. If you're excited about something about work, go toward it.
Yeah.
If you're excited to take a trip, go toward it.
Yeah.
And then it just naturally, that he's like, you know, cards will fall into place as long as you're living your life that way.
Doesn't mean everything's going to be hunky-dory, but it's going to make sense. Like when I look back on my life at all the times I've walked through, like I feel like I could do a chronological map of the major doors I've walked through. They all make sense in hindsight. But at the time, it just felt like, what are you doing? To other people. To me, it made perfect sense.
Yeah.
But people were like, what?
Oh, yeah. And it's totally individualistic. What excites you is different from what excites me. Different from whoever's listening to this. We all have our own unique experience in this world and this our own path. And it's the excitement that you can think of it as your internal compass or your...
I would say as long with the caveat that some people are excited by pretty awful things.
Well,
right. So if you're, what excites you is not going to harm yourself or anyone else,
then that's the way to do it. Yeah.
Right. Right.
That's probably what Bashar meant. But
I'm sure. But, you know, just for us to be clear about that, like, I don't want anybody getting excited about something that's wrong.
Right.
You know, legally or morally. Okay.
Well, we went on a tangent because I really think that like prayer, vision boards, witchcraft, tulpa making, Philip experiment, like everything, there's some similar thread with it all.
It's a mindset.
I don't know what it is, but
I think it's mindset. Whatever you intentionally focus on with your intentional attention, whatever we on purpose give our mental space to and our emotional energy to, that's going to grow. Positive or negative.
I love
it. If you don't set intentions, well, you're going to feel like a leaf in the wind a lot. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Just a leaf blowing along in the wind. And that's
and not being able to affect their changes.
Yeah.
Yes, I can totally think of people I work with or people I have relationships with who very much don't like take initiative. They kind of like, things are going to happen to me. This happened to me.
Right.
But you can affect
absolutely
everything.
Yeah.
And your thoughts and your choices.
And indecision is a decision. Mm-hmm. So by not deciding to walk through doors of opportunity or put some intentionality behind something or take a motivated step, that's a decision. So people have to live in that too. Mm-hmm. Like there's not going to be blasé comfort in indecision and just, well, whatever's meant to be will be. No. I mean, whatever's meant to be in that case is going to be a whole lot of just aimless, I would think, anxiety and lack of excitement.
Lack of excitement.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not excited about what you do most days, like, you're in the wrong thing.
Right.
Yeah. I'm excited every day to go to work.
Me too.
Doesn't mean I'm not tired sometimes, but I love what I do.
Me too. Yeah. And it's paid off for me. Like going down what excites me path at work. I've had like better job after promotion after, like, it's just been this trajectory that I'm really proud of and really love.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Same. Like with maybe not promotions, but like going the TII adventure and things like that. It's like, well, now getting into the political realm, like just walking through doors and growing as a human being and learning a lot, fall on your face sometimes, but get back up and you're stronger for the next door that opens. So now we alluded to it earlier with the Kindred Spirits. It's an amazing show. I can never find it, but it's on the Discovery Channel sometimes, A&E other times, History Channel. It's called Kindred Spirits, and it stars Amy Bruni and Adam Berry, who are like best friends, and they met while doing Ghost Hunters, and he's the godfather of her child. Like, they're tight. Aww,
I like them because they don't yell at ghosts. They don't provoke ghosts.
No,
they treat
them like human beings. They just aren't alive anymore.
Yeah, they're very just kind and empathetic. And it's a whole different ghost hunting show experience from all those, you know, aggressive talk, you know, ghost shows that
they
are out
go
there.
In not wanting to prove the existence of something, but to find out if they can help in any way.
Yeah.
And I love that too. So in Kindred Spirits, season 3, episode 8, best episode, in my opinion, of the entire show ever.
I'm going to go home and watch it this week.
Well, you have to. It's called The Ghost Train Experiment. Have you seen that one? You've seen it.
I've seen it, but I don't recall. Do they make a train?
You have to watch it again.
They make a train noise? Something makes a train noise?
You got to watch it again.
Okay.
So they conduct a similar experiment to the Philip experiment. They invent a fictional train conductor named George, who died tragically. They tell the story to a family experiencing paranormal phenomena. Once the family believes, the activity spikes.
Wait, do they tell the family? They don't tell them that they're doing an experiment on them. They tell the family, look what we found. We found out there's this man named George who died near here. That's kind of shady, though.
There's more to it than that, I feel like. I don't feel like there was any shadiness to it. But they had to... I think they, now I need to watch again. But from what I remember, I think they involved the family. Sort of like this group with the Philip experiment. They knew what they were doing, I think. Because I don't remember there being, Amy and Adam don't mess with people like that.
No, they're not.
So they, once the family started buying into this story and talking about this story, the activity spikes. And there was already activity in the home.
Oh.
And it was all made up. But something.
Excuse me.
Bless you. Something was stirred anyway. So like kids playing.
Go back.
God
sorry.
Bless you.
Just go back.
like kids playing pretend so hard that they creep themselves out. So, you know, when you like tell ghost stories around the campfire and then you're the one who jumps the first little sound. But then you add fear, imagination, and belief, and it feels real. So we've seen it with like the Slender Man things and Bloody Mary. So like with Slender Man, Bloody Mary, all those kind of urban legendy things, the story becomes the engine that drives it. So people actually do say that they've experienced things because they've put the energy out there so much that maybe it's manifested.
I wonder if Ouija boards, that's a similar situation.
Yeah.
People just believe that something scary is going to happen, and so something scary does happen.
Yeah, and there's another component to that, too. In fact, look, I think Ouija boards in my very next little bit, but that's called ideomotor effect.
I know the ideomotor effect because it's been on my mind nonstop since the telepathy tapes came out.
Oh, yeah, because of the spelling boards.
Right.
That makes sense. Well, okay, would you be brave enough to invent a ghost in your own house just to test it?
You're asking good questions. I don't know that I'm that person. I would like someone to do right. it, but I don't know if it's me.
Right, right.
But please.
I would also like someone to, like, work out for me. And let me know how it goes.
I really want more people to do all kinds of experiments into paranormal things. Good experiments.
But maybe they're just all scaredy cats like you and I.
Not everybody. There's got to be somebody listening who's like, I'll do it.
Amy Bruni will do anything.
Wow.
And she has. She's put herself in some of the scary. And I think Doug and, or no, not Doug. Dana Newkirk and what's the man's name? It's not Doug.
Greg,
thank you. Sorry, Greg. They are really brave too.
If I did it, if I tried to make up a ghost in my own home and manifest something, I would very specifically choose very sweet things. You know,
oh, like, yes.
Please leave a flower by right. my bedside, or please write in the, you know, the steam on the shower. Please
you're
write
beautiful.
Me. You're beautiful.
Yeah.
That's my ghost.
That's hilarious. And we just talked about the ideomotor effect, which is our unconscious movements, like Ouija boards or potentially the spelling boards from the people in the telepathy tapes. It's our bodies. Our body reacts with subtle movements that we don't even notice.
You might, yep. Yeah, the thing is, you don't even know, which is why the telepathy tape situation is so sensitive because.
Right. It's not like an intentional sabotaging of science.
The people who are, you know,
the helpers.
I do believe in telepathy, but I also believe that the ideomotor effect is real. So people who might be affected by the ideomotor effect and. Having like subtle movements that affect how the child is touching letters on a spelling board, they won't even know.
Right.
And you can't bring it up because it offends them. It's like a very sensitive topic.
But it's reality.
But it's reality,
and it's not their fault.
No, of course not.
And then there's the confirmation bias. So that's you notice what you expect to find. Right, you're primed for a ghost.
Oh, yes.
Every knock feels like a response.
Yes.
If you're listening to the wind, but don't attribute it to the wind, you attribute it to a ghost communicating with you. Well, mm-hmm. then that's going to be what it is for you.
Right.
Like reality, you create your reality.
Right.
Perception is reality.
And it's that same issue of sensitivity where whoever's really has that confirmation bias, they really believe it. So it's difficult to have a conversation with them about the skeptic side.
Right.
Because they're just not there. They're in a whole other headspace. They're sure. They've confirmed.
Well, and I think your world shrinks sometimes when you're in these super intimate relationships with clients or patients or your special needs child or special needs student. It's such an intense and emotionally, mentally intimate relationship. That I think a lot of people in those situations kind of have blinders on to other people because those are the people, there's no way anybody else can understand the relationship between two people in a relationship
right,
like that.
Right.
Except maybe two other people
right.
who are in a similar relationship. And people get very protective
mm-hmm.
over their intimate relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And even when it's professional, it's still intimate.
Mm-hmm.
If you are having, you know, you are perceiving, you are transcribing, detailing, chronicling the inner thoughts of someone else, whatever way that is, that's an intimate relationship.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I just think sometimes people are real hesitant to separate the emotional intimacy from the scientific act of like
yeah.
we're not trying to take anything away from you. In fact, we're trying to highlight
trying to help.
this intense mm-hmm. relationship and how special it is.
Right.
But in order to do that, we have to compartmentalize just the science of it.
You said that so beautifully. And that's exactly where I wish the telepathy tapes would take that perspective rather than just you know, believe everybody. Idiomotor effect is not real.
Right.
Yeah, I can't, they go too far. They just go too far for me.
Yeah. I hear you. I agree. So have you, this is kind of a random question, but have you ever, and take a second to think about it, caught yourself doing something because you expected a paranormal reaction?
Oh. I don't know that I walk around expecting paranormal reactions all the time.
I don't know if I expect them, but sometimes I feel like I brace myself for them. Like in my bathroom recently, there was the, you know, oftentimes we have a shower, stand-up shower, and like, you know, just a stand-up walk-in shower. There's no tub. It's just a shower with a door, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a light, a canister light above. Well, it was doing weird stuff. The light's just burning out. Like, but it just took forever. I'm used to light bulbs that are just on one day, and then the next day they might go, you turn it on, it goes, and then it's out. This light would like come on for a while and then go off for a little while. And it was always like when I was taking a shower, it seemed like, which is when I have the light on. So it's not like it's paranormal. It's just that's when I happen to have the light on. And so I was like, well, I don't know. I'm open-minded. Maybe this is something trying to communicate. And this was weeks ago. This went on for weeks. And then suddenly, I want to say maybe a week ago, the light finally just went kaputs. And it's really high up there, so I may not never have a light in the shower again. But, yeah, and I think water was just getting into the filament. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, not the filament, but the elements, the electrical components up there. And it, maybe it was a little loose and whatever, but it's out now. But I was, like, asking things out loud. Like a, trying to, if there was somebody trying to communicate, I wanted to make sure that they knew I was listening and open to it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess it would, I guess a similar experience for me would be, I'm very afraid to see a shadow at night, like the Hat Man.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to our Hat Man episode if you haven't, because it's one of my favorite episodes.
Fantastic. Shout out to Ryan.
But we had a guest on who has seen the Hat Man multiple times, and I have seen a similar black shadow just one time in my life. So, but I'm afraid of it happening at night in my bedroom when I'm like vulnerable and alone. So I expect to see it. So I don't open my eyes at night.
And that's hilarious.
I have tripped and stubbed my toe.
No, you get up and move around.
Well, if I gotta get up and go to the bathroom, I do it with my eyes closed until I can turn on the light because I'm scared.
Oh.
And I don't know why. You know, what's funny is I'm not scared something's gonna touch me, which I should probably be. Like that would really be scary.
I'd be scared I'd break my neck because I'm gonna trip and fall on the dog.
Yes, I step on everything. It's horrible. And but I won't open my eyes.
That
it's
is
too
so
scary.
Cute.
So I wait till I turn the light on. But now I'm worried. Now we're talking about like thoughts creating and manifesting things. What if I'm actually going to create one sometime?
Because it's like, there's one in there now. It's just like, oh God, just open your eyes. You see me once and I'm out of here. I just need you to recognize what you created.
30 years right? Waiting for
just
you.
Just over there like.
There she goes stepping on a Lego again.
Yep. I could have told you that Lego was there, but you wouldn't look at me. I'd be like, whoa, stop. There's a Lego on the floor.
That is my, now we're, that guy, I'm going to name him Barney, and he's now going to be.
He lives in Long Island. Oh my gosh. Okay. It makes me think, another question for you is, do you think paranormal investigators should be trained in psychology as much as they are in ghost gear?
I think they should be trained in the scientific method.
Yes.
I think they should be trained in appropriate like protocols for developing hypothesis and testing that hypothesis. And
some of these things like idiomotor reflexes might need to be a part of that like psychological understanding though. Like these are things, phenomena that are shown to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you don't see it or anybody says that they did this or that thing, it is been known to happen. So just have this in your little notebook of paranormal researcher.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tidbits.
The more you learn, the better you are at all kinds of things in life.
Yeah.
So let's fund public education, please.
Yep. And teach science in that public education. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Well, don't get me started. Okay. Folklore across the world. This is our last section. Folklore across the world supports the power of belief. World over. So there's golems, which I'm going to touch on.
I'm interested to know how golems are different from tulpas. Is it because golems have a physical form and tulpas yes. don't?
Okay. Yes. So, and then there's Tsukumogami, which is Japanese. So golems come from Jewish mythology I don't want to say mythology. That's the word that pops up in my research, but Jewish belief systems. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a Hebrew word, golem, meaning shapeless mass or unfinished substance. And the word appears once in the Bible, actually, in Book of Psalms, chapter 139, verse 16, referring to something imperfect or unformed as golem.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I think I heard a tale that they would like create them out of mud or clay.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you. Okay. Want to know?
Yeah.
So the Golem of Prague, Czechoslovakia. Rabbi Judah Lo Ben Bezalel.
Oh my gosh. Do it again and just hit it. Hit it right out of the
gate. Rabbi Judah Lo Ben Bezalel.
Beautiful.
A 16th century rabbi and mystic. Oh God, I want to be a mystic.
Me too.
From Prague, is said to have created a golem to protect the Jewish community from anti-Semitic attacks and blood libel accusations. I don't know what a blood libel accusation is, but it sounds awful.
Yeah.
Don't hit me with that blood libel accusation.
I hope the golem was able to protect him.
So he sculpted this golem from clay, typically the story goes from the banks of the Vltava River, and brought it to life by inscribing the Hebrew word emet, meaning truth, on its forehead. The golem followed orders, but eventually became too powerful or uncontrollable. To deactivate it, the rabbi erased the first letter of emet, leaving met, meaning dead.
Oh.
So it's a symbol of protector and servant, but it's also a warning about the dangers of unchecked power and playing God. And a lot of people attribute things like warnings, like the golem as in like AI and other things that are going on now, is there's a lot of people with spiritual anxiety because of this.
Well, now we know how to make a golem, idea. So thanks for coming to the classroom today.
Right, well, they appear in pop culture too, so if you didn't get it here, they're in the X-Files.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
The Simpsons.
You know what it reminds me of?
What?
Remember in Shrek, the gingerbread man?
Oh, yeah.
I think he's like a golem.
He is a little bit.
Because if you're going to shape one out of clay, no, I'm going to protect you from blood libel.
You know the Muffin Man?
The Muffin Man!
Who lives on Drury Lane? On Drury Lane!
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the golem.
Not the gumdrop buttons! Let's see, novels, movies, TV shows. Some see the golem, is an early concept of AI or even a thought form created through prayer and intention.
And clay.
Yes, and a little bit of Play-Doh. The Tsukumogami, rooted in... I just nailed the crap out of that word!
Good job!
Truth be told, I did watch some YouTube pronunciation guides on that one. Rooted in Shingo Buddhism and Shinto animism. Japanese objects. The theory is that Japanese objects gain a soul after 100 years in existence.
What? So, like, if your shoes are around for 100 years, they have a soul? Is any object?
S-O-U-L.
Oh, stop. S-O-L-E.
So, no. The word... Yeah. So, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about in just a second. So, the word breaks down to Tsukumo, which means 99, and Kami, which means God or spirit, hinting at something just short of full divinity. Like, 99% God is a Tsukumogami. Typically harmless or mischievous, these spirits are born from once useful household items, like umbrellas, sandals, teapots, or lanterns. Think umbrellas with eyes, lanterns that talk. Think about anime.
My gosh, this Spirited world is Away. Adorable.
I don't know how you say this. Gigigi no Kitaro manga and video games like Yokai Watch. So there's all kinds of these objects that have a spirit about them and do different things. Like Howl's Moving Castle even is a whole castle thing.
Well, he's got the fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so, that's so cute though. That's
quirky.
Like putting googly eyes on everything and calling him a...
Oh, yeah. That's a great way to look at it. That's the animism part. So it's rooted in Buddhism and animism. They're quirky, emotional, and often teach lessons about wastefulness and respect. which I love that. Okie dokie. So which would you rather be true for you? Haunted umbrellas or clay guardians?
Well, is the clay guardian going to hurt me or help me?
Guardian.
The clay guardian.
Yeah. I guess, is it going to be useful? My husband teases me because I'm all about, I need things to produce. Like, we have all these pets. They produce nothing except joy. I mean, they make us laugh, but they're not big on the production meter in my household. If I just have this googly-eyed umbrella kicking around, that's going to get on my nerves. But also the golem, I'd just be a little leery of the whole time. Like, I trust you with my life, but I'm going to sleep with one eye open in case you change your mind.
I think it'd be fun to have a golem. My golem would be fun.
I picture the, like, at first I think of, like, the guy in Fantastic Four.
Yes!
Rock guy.
Bing bong! That's what he says. That's what he says.
He does?
Bing bong. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
And then I think of, then there's the little, did you ever see that scary movie growing up called The Gate? The horror movie.
Oh, that movie scared the poop out of me.
Yeah. I saw it at a fourth grade sleepover.
Oh, no.
It was just one of those, like, core memories that you can't erase. And that's what I think of, like, little golems, like, little creepy, little slimy, little clay looking things. Alrighty, well, let's see if I have any one more.
I want a golem. I grew up loving movies like Labyrinth, right? Like, the golem would just fit me. A little puppet looking golem.
A small one.
A small one.
Yeah, not like a rock monster kind of thing, like huge pig.
Right, ugly cute.
Yeah.
Squishy.
Squishy! Okay, now I'm in. Yeah. Yeah. But you just gotta be prepared to erase a letter. It gets out of hand.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask our listeners for their homework to create a ghost and check in with us after a week, but
that might be really irresponsible, but I want to do
what could go wrong?
Well, why don't we just have them join us with Gloria Burlington, Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And see if we can get something going.
And then tell us about her on our socials, like at the Paranormal Classroom on Instagram and Facebook, and email us theparanormalclassroom@gmail.com. Drop us a line, make up a story about her. We'll put it into the universe.
Nothing scary.
No, she can't be a murderess.
She can't be scary if we're going to do this experiment.
Yeah, because she's going to be riding around in the back of my car.
Right.
She better be okay with a little clutter. Otherwise, she's going to be mad. All right. That's all I got. That was kind of a wild ride through, like, psychology and spirituality and supernatural versus just the very natural that we don't understand in our brains.
Right. Deep and thoughtful.
Who knows what all of this is, but it's fun to wonder. That's it.
Okay. Class dismissed.
And don't open the door.
Thanks, Lindsay. There's no one else in the world I would be able to talk about that stuff with.
No.
With you?
Not at that length.
No.
Nobody would entertain me for that long with
so this great, though.
Duff.
You're getting so smart about the weirdest things.
Want some Jelly Bellies?
Yeah,
Mike just gave me three packages of juicy pear Jelly Bellies.
What's your favorite flavor of Jelly Belly?
Great question. Juicy pear is up there. It might be my favorite. I really love candy apple.
Wow, this tastes just like a pear. It's
the
amazing
texture, right?
Yeah.
It has the grittiness of a pear.
Wow.
I am amazed all the time by the magical power within a Jelly Belly jelly bean. Like, how do they pack that much flavor into a tiny bean? How do they do it?
I don't know, but it fills your whole mouth.
Yeah.
With flavor.
They do a good job. Well done, Jelly Belly. Sponsor us. Have you ever been to the factory, Jelly Belly?
Yeah, where is it?
I don't know. California, I think.
Where all the good things are. All the good things are there. Harrison Ford. Disneyland.
Does Harrison Ford live in California?
I don't know.
I think there's a pretty mass exodus out to the more rural areas for a lot of Hollywood people.
Yeah. But that's still California, right?
No, I'm thinking like Colorado, New Mexico, Utah. I think they really get away most of the time. I wouldn't want to live in LA. Fires, crowds, can't drive anywhere.
I know. It's the cost for me.
Oh, that too.
I don't know how people survive down there.
No. I don't either. I don't either.
I don't know how they survive here in Seattle. If you have a job that is just like a not a high paying job, but a good job, how do you even survive?
You can't live in Seattle. You have to commute from somewhere like here.
That's a long time on the train.
It is. And
I had a thought about Gloria Burlington. So we could test her.
It's already started.
Let's say that she smokes out of one of those, you know, those long cigarette holders?
Mm-hmm.
Were those around in the 1800s? I think they were.
Well, are we going 1800s or are we going...
Or 19... When, well, well, the train. Look. When was the train?
Okay, let's look.
Because I'm thinking if she's a smoker, we might get assigned by smelling smoke. Ooh. But I was also thinking if she's... You know how some people talk and they like tap while they're talking? You know those people? You know?
Yeah, they're really annoying. They're usually 5 and 6
years
old.
What if she's one of those tappers? And then if we sit here and we feel a little tap on our shoulder, nothing scary, but like a...
Okay. All right, 1827 was the year trains were first introduced in the United States. And that was the first railroad in North America, the Baltimore and Ohio, was chartered in 1827 and completed in 1830. However, the first commercial train track was constructed in 1826 in Quincy, Massachusetts. The first steam-powered passenger service began in South Carolina in 1830. So, yeah, we're looking at early 1800s. Another funny word, tobacconist.
Oh my gosh, she could be a tobacconist. That is a cool word.
That is a cool word.